Welcome to the latest edition of Auto Insider, where we're talking cars, car dealerships, and mostly crap about both. I don't know about you, but I think we're about ready to get started.
Here's the deal. Auto Insider.
That would be moi.
That'd be you.
Yeah.
Give us a little bit of background. Your history in the car business. Why should anyone even be press and play on Auto Insider? Why would they want to listen to this? What type of insights are they going to get from you?
Well, I don't know. I've only been in the automobile industry for 43 years. I started in 1977 at a small Dodge Subaru store, Ionaco Motors, and on the Black Horse Pike in Berlin, New Jersey, not to be confused with the, well, Ionaco Motors in Berlin, Germany. And it was a small Dodge and Subaru store. I was wet behind the ears, as green could be. And I was one of seven or eight people that they hired to agree to train to become salespeople. And the training was minimal, and there were two of us that survived. And somehow I turned it into a 43-year career. And I've been everything from a salesman to a lot attendant to a to a general manager, to a sales manager, to a general sales manager, to a flunky, to a whatever needed to be done, I did. And I don't know, I have a little bit of experience as to, well, how the sales departments operated at an automobile dealership. And most people are kind of either fascinated or frightened, one of the two, when it comes to dealing with people in a dealership setting.
Definitely. Yeah. I think frightened is probably the right word. So with Auto Insider, with this podcast, what we're going to be doing is every week when we have a new episode that's out, we'll be sharing more light. We do this on our YouTube channel, Your Auto Advocate, if you're ever interested in seeing our faces. But every single week, we're going to put out a new episode. We're going to walk you through that dealership process. And I say we, but it's really going to be Ray. It's really going to be my dad, who those 43 years of experience, every episode I learn something new, and so can you. It's really quite cool.
The first thing they'll learn is if they go to our YouTube channel, they'll realize that I, at least, have the perfect face for a podcast.
I didn't want to tell you that.
Now, you, on the other hand, I don't know, the young women seem to find you attractive.
You're very kind, Dad.
Well, right. You are my son.
So, for our first episode here, what I really would love for us to get into,
yes,
is why is buying a car so hard? Because everyone I talk to, my peers,
yeah,
they've always struggled with buying a car. And part of the reason I even wanted to start Your Auto Advocate with you, Dad, was because I had that realization that I didn't think buying a car was that hard. And it was like, oh.
No, you had your father do it for you.
Yeah, Dad did it. So it was super easy.
Yeah.
So why is buying a car so hard? You saw it from the, you know, the dealership side for so long. Why?
Why is it so hard? Because it's one of the few items in this country that you actually have to negotiate for. Whenever this all started, when manufacturers decided that there should be franchise dealers and that they would just build cars and wholesale those cars to their franchise dealers and leave it up to the dealers to sell them, nobody decided at that time that, well, whatever the price is. What was decided is, well, we'll sell it from the manufacturer to the dealer, and the dealer is free to sell it for whatever he wants. And hell, cars didn't even have window stickers at that time. They didn't even have really asking prices, whatever the dealer wanted to ask. And so that started us down this path of, here's the product, here's what we're telling you we want for it. And I don't know, maybe we'll take less, maybe we won't. Why don't we have a conversation about that? And most people, that was not something that they were comfortable doing because they didn't do it on a daily basis. So they, you know, customers felt like they were at a disadvantage. And, well, they were, you know, because dealers do this constantly, and they actually train salespeople on how to do this. And so it instead of it becoming a opportunity for people to be able to have some fun spending money, it became an opportunity to equate this to pulling teeth. And so it it's just a miserable process for most customers. By the way, between you and me, And for all those who might be listening, the one or two others that might be listening, it's really a miserable process for the people trying to sell the cars as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that gets lost, is that the whole experience is pretty shitty. Hate to say it, but from watching you as your son, you were always working. Customers could come in late, they could stay late. I mean, you were never not working. And then from the customer side, they always felt like they were getting a bad deal. I mean, it really, the whole car buying process, the more I got, you know, exposed to it, the more broken it appeared. And some of the things you've told me from your initial training back in the 70s and 80s.
I don't remember my initial training. All a haze.
But those antiquated practices are still in place at a lot of dealerships. And you'd hope with a new guard coming in that things will get better, but it's not even that clear that that's going to happen.
It's just a time-consuming business that's built on antiquated techniques and practices. It would be so much simpler if everybody figured out what the average transaction price was for every car that's ever been sold, or that's sold, and that just became the price.
You like to say, the price is the price.
Yeah, and there's no room for discussion, and there's no arguing back and forth over the price. You're not arguing with anybody at Kohl's when you're buying a polo shirt. Whatever they have the price mark, that's what the price is, unless, of course, that's the week that they have it on sale.
Kohl's cash.
Where you get to spend your Kohl's cash that, you know, is, go figure, only good at Kohl's. Never quite figured out how that worked. So why shouldn't it be that way? Why shouldn't it be that, I mean, because the manufacturers all have the data to know what every new car that got sold last year was sold for. They know what it was. They can put all that data together. They can come up with a base Ford Mustang. The average selling price was, I don't know, pick a number, $27,500. Okay, then base Mustangs are going to be priced at $27,500, and that's the price of the car. And you go to your Ford dealership, and you don't go to 14 Ford dealerships. You go to the Ford dealership that's closest to you, because you know whether you go to him or you go to the guy that's 300 miles away, that same car is going to be $27,500. Wouldn't that make life easier?
Yeah, and you see companies like Tesla have brought this to the market, and you do that whole, there aren't even dealers. You don't have a Tesla dealership. You have those showrooms.
Yes.
But you order everything online. It's a whole different process, and one that, you know, I've never bought a Tesla. You've never bought a Tesla, but it seems that people that have are pretty fanatical about it. Maybe that's the wave of the future and what comes next. You know, but there's also the CarMaxes.
The problem is that you have, when it comes to new car franchises, I don't know how many thousands of them there are. 17,000 new car franchises. And they're all part of a franchise system that all the manufacturers have set up. And Tesla is not part of that, so they've never had a franchise dealer body.
How do you get
these 17,000 dealers to give up what they have?
Yeah, which speaks to the brokenness of the franchise dealership model.
Yeah, well, what you need to do is you need to get them all on the same page and agree that all the cars are just going to be sold for what the average transaction prices were, and they'll no longer be negotiated.
Easier said than done. I was about to say.
I know when I was at the Acura, not the Acura store, the Mini store, I used to have this conversation with the owner's daughter all the time. You know, if ever there's hope in the industry to make it simple for somebody, it's at Mini dealerships. There was only 120 dealerships at that time. So you only had to convince 120 dealer principals that, you know, to differentiate Mini from everybody else, maybe it would be a good idea if at every Mini store, the price, the MSRP was listed, what the average transaction price was, and say, this is the selling price, and you could show what the discount was, and everybody sold it for the same, and everybody's life was just easier. The salespeople's lives were easier, the manager's lives were easier, the customer's lives would definitely be easier, because they don't have any fear that, you know, they're being taken advantage of when they're paying the same price as anybody else. Definitely. You don't have to be a good negotiator for that.
And then you see companies like TrueCar come along, and they totally botch the opportunity to help influence what you just described, because really they work on behalf of the dealers.
That's where they derive their money.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have TrueCar, which from the consumer standpoint shows you all this, well, this is what the price should be. And all of that doesn't actually reflect some of the realities on the dealership side. And then the dealers are the ones paying for those leads anyway. There's this huge disconnect between what you just described, which sounds so simple in theory, and then in practice what actually happens. And maybe you could share, because I know you told me in the past that that mini dealership that you worked at had tried to move to one price selling, which we've seen a lot of dealerships do that. And if you're not familiar with one price selling, that's where it's not negotiable. The price is the price. At least, again, in theory, that's what it's supposed to be. So well, talk to me about...
At that store, they did move to negotiation-free selling. They take a look at their inventory on a weekly basis and make adjustments as needed on every car, and that's the price. You come in, and the first thing they do is they sit you down and explain to you why they do what they do, why people appreciate this type of shopping experience, and why it makes sense for everybody involved. And if you say, well, you make the car $100 less and I'll buy it, they'll say, well, it's really been nice chatting with you, but we can't do that because, well, that wouldn't be fair to the next customer who comes in. If and there were dealerships in the 90s, there were dealerships that started to move over to that model, a one-price selling model. I worked for a group in Arizona that half of the stores were negotiating stores and half of the stores were one-price stores. And in the one-price store, the price was the price and there was negotiating, and if you wanted to negotiate, they let you leave. And in the other half of the group that were negotiating stores, we were the traditional stores, and you know, we went through the back and forth and the 3 hours worth of arguing and negotiating. And ultimately what happened was eventually all the stores became negotiating stores.
Yeah.
And they did away with the one price store. So even though I personally believe that all the stores should be one price, and even though there were dealerships that tried it because they thought customers would appreciate the ease of doing business that way, it turned out well that people were so conditioned that they still want to negotiate. They're gonna complain. They're gonna bitch and moan about the process. Oh, I hate having to go into automobile dealerships. And when they were given the opportunity to go into one where they didn't have to negotiate, they would still try to negotiate. So it's like, I don't know how you break the customer's way of thinking when it comes to, well, they don't really mean it when they say they're a one price store. No, they really do mean it. You're just not willing to accept it.
Which in part comes from those years of feeling like you were taken advantage of, and honestly still being in a one-price store and still feeling like you're getting taken advantage of.
Yeah, well, at what point does a customer feel like they're not being taken advantage
of? When they win the negotiation. You know, I think that's one of the challenges.
Yeah, but if there wasn't negotiating, at what point?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
At what point? When it becomes an Apple product and they just accept whatever the price is?
Or
is
Tesla,
that,
yeah.
Is that the point?
Yeah. No, that's what's tricky about this is there's been so many decades of mistreatment towards customers.
Well, not to stand up for people in the car business because people because people in the car business brought this shit on themselves. but if you were to talk to people in the car business, you know, they will tell you that any number of their customers are just really rude and ignorant and arrogant and demeaning people in the way that they deal with you, because they've decided before they've even shaken your hand or said hello that because you sell cars for a living, you're the scum of the earth. And you know, that's not always the case. I'm not going to tell you that there aren't some people that are salespeople that aren't the scum of the earth, because there are. You know, it's like in any walk of life, there's good people and there's bad people. And in most walks of life, there's more good people than there are bad people. But the dealership personnel, I'll tell you, they hated having to deal with customers because the customer lies to them. And dealer personnel, I'll tell you, I couldn't lie to the customer as much as they lie to me. And in all the years I was doing this, I remember once I said to one of my general managers, I said, "You're going to know when it's my last day." And she said, "Well, why is that?" I said, "Because when somebody says something stupid to me, rather than pretend I didn't hear it, I'm going to look at them and just go, what do you think, I'm a fucking moron? That's all nonsense that you just said to me. That's a big, colossal lie." "Oh, and by the way, this is my last day. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you." But you know, it was like there were so many times as a manager or as a salesperson that you have to bite your tongue when you know that people are just straight out lying to you. And it's like you just want to like slap them across the face and say, "Come on, man, what are we doing here? I'll make a pledge to you. I won't try and blow smoke up your ass if you don't try to blow smoke up my ass." But you know, as a sales manager or as a salesman, you're not allowed to say that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's broken on both sides. That's for sure.
Okay, it's broken. And you know the other thing that's broken, if I may rant for a moment. The other thing that's broken is the power that the customer has in them because they get a survey and how important that factory survey is. And you know, those factory surveys are answered by about 25% of the people that actually buy a car. And you wonder what compels those 25% of buyers to actually answer the survey. And then I don't know what the psychology is behind those 25%, but since they only represent a quarter of all the people that bought cars, why should we base everything that we do in the future on those 25%? Why don't we get a survey as the dealership on the customer as to how easy we thought the customer was to work with and how honest we thought the customer was to work with? But we can't do that.
Yeah. You bring up interesting points, though, because I think of when you say that Uber, Lyft, all the different ride-sharing apps, which we're in, you know, COVID times, so no one's really doing that right now. But
is there a pandemic or something?
I don't think we should joke about that. There are ratings for the drivers that they give to their passengers.
Yeah.
So it is interesting that you bring that up because it's a two-way street.
Should be.
No, it is. I mean, the transaction is between the consumer and, you know, the salesperson at the dealership. And
I mean, why should the dealer get a survey that says, did you feel as if the consumer was dealing honestly and openly with you? And you could put, no, it was a lying sack of shit. And everything that came out of his mouth was a lie, you know, because that's how they feel about the salespeople, you know. And my favorite was... Well, how did you feel about the surroundings? Well, I didn't like the coffee. Well, we didn't charge you for the damn coffee. I mean, come on, get real in life. What's really important? Is it the comfort of the chairs? Is it the free amenities? Is it the ice cold water or the hot coffee or the quality of the coffee? I mean, what's really important when you're buying this stuff? What's really important to be questioned about? I used to say, and I argued this with every manufacturer who I ever represented, there should be only two questions on the survey. Just two.
Yeah.
Not 20, not 40, two. Do you like your car? That's number one. Did you like your dealer enough to do business with them another time? End of sentence. That's all you need to know. Okay? Either you like the car or you didn't. Either you like the dealer enough to do business with them again. If the answer is I wouldn't do business with them again, that's all you need to know about that dealer. And that's all the manufacturer needs to know about that dealer. And if the customer says, oh my God, yeah, I do business with them in a heartbeat, you don't need another 35 questions to figure out, okay, that dealer's doing something right. It's not that hard. We make it a hell of a lot more complicated than it needs to be. At least in my experience.
Yeah. All right, well, let's leave it there for today. We'll pick back up.
Okay, we'll leave it right there. Right there.
We'll pick back up in the next episode. Okay. And, appreciate it. You're our auto insider, Dad.
Hey, I'm your auto insider. I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm feeling pretty good because, well, I only spent 43 years doing this shit.
Because my son told me to.
Yeah, told me I had to.
Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.